This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A source close to the Iran nuclear negotiations said that the U.S. must remove all sanctions imposed during the Trump and Obama administrations. According to the Yemeni army, it has launched new retaliatory drone strikes on Jizan Airport and a major military airbase in Saudi Arabia. A local monitoring group says more than 700 people have been killed in Myanmar since the army launched a brutal crackdown on anti-coup protesters in February. Good to have you with us. Beginning with our top story, a source close to the Iran nuclear negotiations says that the removal of nuclear-related U.S. sanctions won't be enough, and Washington needs to end all the anti-Iran measures taken or relabeled by the Trump administration. The source says the U.S. is also to remove the Obama-era sanctions, including ISA and visa program measures. It is stressed that all those measures have to be removed indefinitely, adding that Iran won't accept any issuance of waivers instead of removing the sanctions regime. The source noted that a verification of U.S. sanctions removal would at least take 3 to 6 months. It noted that a U.S. representative will have to go back to Washington empty-handed if America does not accept Iran's conditions. From Pappas, I'm joined by Polina Mitfoto, who is a political analyst. Good to have you with us, Polina. So how do you look at this? Do you think that the Biden administration and Mr. Biden himself, as he was claiming during his presidential campaign, are they really honest and they want to revive the Iran nuclear deal?
Well, actually, we have to understand why the United States, they are coming back to the table. They are not coming back to the table because they have planned it or because they want it. They came back after Iran signing the $400 billion agreement with China. So United States now, they are really afraid that Iran is going to be a solid ally of China in the region. They are really afraid about their interests in the region because they have been trapped by working for the Israeli interests in the region. So at the moment, they see that probably they are going to have not only political and strategic changes in the region, they have to face it, and probably they are going to be out of their plans and they will not be able to participate long term. But also we see that probably they are facing tremendous economic and commercial issues. We have to understand that this agreement is going to change totally the root of the things, and especially the root of commerce in the whole hemisphere. I mean, Iran is signing this agreement with China, so we talked about the Sierra, the area that starts from Shanghai. It goes to Singapore, it goes to Indian Ocean, and ends up in the Persian Gulf and in Mediterranean. So we believe that, this agreement is the biggest agreement that happened ever in the history of Eurasia and of global commerce. So for the United States, the strategic interest is not only that have to do with their power in the region and the military and their own political interest, it has to do with their economical interest as well. So Iran is becoming a very good ally of China, but also this agreement is not only engaging China and Iran, but also has the potential to engage all the other local markets in Central Asia and to become the regional also collaborations and organizations like the Shanghai Organization, like ECHO, to have greater power and greater influence in Eurasia and later on in Europe, as the countries that are going to be engaged, they start from Lebanon and they end up in China. So it's very important to understand that Biden administration is really afraid that it's losing its strategic influence in the region and its strategic place. So if Iran is going back to the negotiations, I believe that we have to be realist and understand that the sanctions are not going to be lifted immediately. And actually, I don't believe that we're going to see any serious sanctions to be lifted before in 1 year from now.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments from Paphos, Cyprus. That was Polina Anifter, political analyst, who joined us with her take. Now, the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran has reported an incident at the country's Natanz uranium enrichment plant. Behruz Kamalvandi, spokesman of the organization, says that the incident affected part of the electricity distribution network. He says that it's caused no casualties or contamination and is being investigated. Former Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, Moshe Yaalon, said that he hopes no one in Israel will take responsibility for the Natanz incident implicitly. Yaalon said that those are things for which silence is always beautiful. Now, the incident came a day after Iran started up several cascades of advanced centrifuges in the facility. Last year, a blast hit a centrifuge assembly line at Natanz, which Iran described as an act of sabotage. Iranian nuclear chief Ali Akbar Salehi blamed the explosion on enemies. Now, the Yemeni army says it's carried out fresh drone strikes, hitting targets in southern Saudi Arabia successfully. Army spokesman Yahya Saria said that the attacks targeted military hangars at Jizan Airport and King Khalid Air Base near the city of Hamas Mushait. He said the two Qassam-2K drones were used in the operation in response to the Saudi aggression and continued siege of Yemen. Meanwhile, the Saudi-led coalition said that it intercepted and destroyed a Yemeni explosives-laden drone heading for Hamas Mushait. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a deadly war on Yemen in 2015. To reinstate a friendly regime there. Yemeni forces are pushing ahead with the retaliatory strikes to force Riyadh to end the aggression and blockade on the impoverished country. The Latif al-Washali says that the Yemeni army aims to push Saudi Arabia toward a political solution to the long-running conflict.
The Yemeni army is pressing ahead with its operations and retaliatory attacks against Saudi facilities to push Saudi Arabia to move toward a political solution to stop its siege and to stop its war against the Yemeni people. The Yemeni army is also pressing ahead with its operations on the ground against Marib City, which is the last stronghold of Saudi Arabia and northern Yemen. The Yemeni army is pressing ahead with its operations to push Saudi Arabia to stop its war, to move toward the political solution, to end the suffering of millions of Yemeni people. The siege is killing tens of thousands of Yemenis, according to officials here in Sana'a. The siege caused a harsh shortage of fuel, and most of the health facilities have stopped providing health services to civilians, including women and their children, infants, and breastfeeding women.
More than 700 people have been killed in Myanmar since the army launched a brutal crackdown on anti-coup ralliers in February. That's according to a local monitoring group. In one of the bloodiest encounters, security forces shot and killed 82 protesters in the city northeast of the commercial hub Yangon. The violence prompted the UN office in Myanmar to issue a statement in which it said that it's following the bloodshed there. Protests raging in the Southeast Asian nation despite heavy bloodletting recently. Demonstrators in different cities clashed with army soldiers. Myanmar has been in turmoil since the military ousted de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. People have been holding rallies almost on a daily basis to demand a return to civilian rule. Latin America remains one of the hottest spots of the COVID pandemic, with Brazil being the worst nation in that region. It recorded 72,000 new infections Saturday and 2,600 deaths. That puts the total infection there at 13.4 million and the deaths at over 350,000. This is the second worst globally after the U.S. Mexico also reported 2,200 new COVID deaths, one of its biggest one-day tolls. The total fatalities there topping 209,000. In Argentina, authorities tightened restrictions after a record number of daily infections at over 19,000. The country has confirmed over 2.5 million cases and more than 57,000 deaths. Meantime, a new wave of infections has hit Ecuador, which has recorded 343,000 cases and 17,000 fatalities. Turkish and Ukrainian presidents have set for talks on regional and international issues, and also to find ways to expand mutual cooperation in different fronts. So the meeting came amid rising tensions between Russia and Ukraine. Our correspondent, Rashan Saklak, has a report.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held talks with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Istanbul. The visit comes amid tensions between Kiev and Moscow over Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. Meanwhile, Russia bulked up its military presence on Ukraine's eastern border, threatening military action. During the meeting, the two presidents spoke about ways of cooperation in different sectors and strengthening ties between the two countries, including free trade, tourism, and sports. Following the meeting, which was also attended by ministers from both sides, a number of agreements was signed.
Turkey strongly defends the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine. We hope that the escalation in eastern Ukraine will come to an end and the conflict will be resolved through dialogue based on the Minsk agreement.
The United States, after informing Turkey as per the Montreux Convention, sent two warships through Turkish straits towards the Black Sea. Turkish Foreign Ministry said the warships will stay in the Black Sea until May 4.
The tension between Russia and Ukraine is increasing every minute. Ukraine is waiting for support from the EU and the US. But Russia has clearly expressed that Crimea is its red line and will not give it to Ukraine. I think this visit is aimed at sorting things out. Ukraine wants to make sure that Turkey is on its side, especially after the phone call between Turkish and Russian presidents.
Late on Friday, Russian President Vladimir Putin discussed with his Turkish counterpart over the phone the Ukraine crisis and the presence of U.S. warships in the Black Sea. Turkish president assured that Ankara's cooperation with Ukraine does not mean it is against Russia. Analysts believe Turkey is trying to play the role of peacemaker in the region without taking sides. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Now, dates are a staple of the Middle East and some other parts of Asia. For Muslims, they're the food of choice for breaking the fast during the months of Ramadan. But Muslims living in the EU and Britain are being asked not to eat just any date. As Said Puruza reports, it all has to do with where they come from.
Dates, one of the fruits of paradise in Islamic tradition. With their paper-thin skin and juicy, sweet flesh, they have pride of place, especially on Muslim dinner tables.
Walk into any halal shop or indeed any supermarket here in the UK and you're bound to see dates on display. They come from many different places, including from Palestinian territories. And during Ramadan, they simply fly off the shelf. But could the Muslims living here in Britain, by taking dates to break their fast during the holy month, be unknowingly supporting the brutal Israeli occupation of Palestinians?
We put that question to the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, an NGO running a campaign to boycott Israeli dates in the UK, now Israel's third target market.
They were breaking their fast on a date which is being grown on stolen land, which is actually even unlawful, to break your fast with something which is haram.
Israel is one of the world's top five exporters of dates. In 2018, the UK was Israel's largest market for dates worth more than $25 million. Over half of those are grown in illegal settlements, ruled by the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, and several other international organizations as illegal and built on stolen Palestinian land. Not only that, Israeli settlers are set to employ low-paid Palestinian laborers, among them children, to do the back-breaking job of picking the dates. But how are Muslims and non-Muslim Palestinian rights activists to ensure that the dates they're eating are not from the illegal Israeli settlements?
Israelis, instead of coming out and saying product of Israel, they are hiding the identity of the dates. Packages like this, Al-Malik, a Muslim name, Arabic writing, product of Palestine. But when you look, you realize it's a con, because there is no company importer or distributor attached to this.
This year's call to boycott Israeli dates subscribes to the mission of the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement that works to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians and pressure Israel to comply with international law.
We were in Britain number one importer of Israeli dates. Last year we informed everyone that we have become second, and this year we have become third. And at the same time, Palestinian dates are being sort of supported and imported more.
This Ramadan, when Muslims in Britain break their fast with dates, they'll be wise to ask themselves if the dates they're eating are helping ease the suffering of Palestinians, or are they going towards oppressing them? Saeed Purza, London.
Now here in Iran, the health ministry has confirmed 19,600 new COVID infections. And that's when the country is grappling with a fourth wave of the pandemic. Saturday marked the fourth straight day that new infections happen around 20,000. The health ministry also confirmed some 200 new COVID-related deaths. The pandemic is in one of its deadliest phases since it hit Iran. The uptick is blamed on more contagious strain of the virus and New Year travels. This has prompted the government to enforce a 10-day lockdown in 80% of Iranian cities.
As the fourth wave of the coronavirus hits Iran, the country goes under another nationwide lockdown. From Saturday on, for at least 10 days, travel to and from high-risk cities will be banned, and non-essential businesses have to roll down their shutters. Schools, entertainment centers, and all public places will also be closed. Officials have avoided a total lockdown in Tehran, arguing that the capital city accommodates major national and international activities. The closures come amid a new wave of infections across Iran, which is believed to be the UK variant of COVID-19, entering the country from neighboring Iraq.
The first reason why our hospitals are once again overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients is the fact that British variant of the virus slipped into our country through our Khuzestan and Iran borders with Iraq. Now we are unfortunately faced with a fourth wave of the pandemic.
Authorities blame the new spike on the two-week traveling spree during the Persian New Year holidays, which started on March 21st. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Iran has passed the 2 million mark, and the total fatalities have surpassed 64,000.
Any lockdown definitely ensures my health, and I welcome the restrictive measures. But on the other hand, I am losing a significant portion of my income as I am self-employed, and if I close my business, I will not make money.
The government has promised to provide the low-income strata of society with aid packages. Aside from this, the government should put us taxi drivers among the first to receive COVID injections, as we are prone to infection from passengers.
Vaccination of the most vulnerable groups of the society is underway in Iran with Russian-made Sputnik V vaccine. But the country is yet to launch a nationwide vaccination program. The government hopes to kickstart mass inoculation in 2 months using its own homegrown jabs.
While vaccines have also come in the ring to join the fight against COVID-19, the virus is still hard to knock out. Health officials advise everyone to take the new restrictions seriously. As they say, chances of survival are much lower for those who get infected with the UK variant of the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
all of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on March 21st, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz. The domestic significance of elections.
Domestically, elections are in fact an act of renovating the country. When an election is held, fresh individuals enter the arena and assume the responsibilities. This is in fact renovating the executive apparatus of the country. This is a very important issue because a new impetus is given to the executive organization of the country. Well, the executive branch has a very heavy duty. Later on, I will expand on this issue. Therefore, a group of fresh and motivated individuals will enter the arena, and this is a very auspicious and blessed phenomenon for the country.
The international significance of elections.
Internationally, elections and the people's presence and participation are a sign of national power. All of us should know and acknowledge that defensive and diplomatic capabilities empower the country. There is no doubt about this, but above all, it is the people in a country who are the most important source of power. When everyone in the world, enemies and friends, feel that a nation is vigilant, awake, determined and motivated, such a nation and country will be respected by everyone, including friends and enemies. Therefore, the people's presence will strengthen the country, and elections are the manifestation of the people's presence. Revolutionary gatherings are a manifestation of popular presence, the most important of which is undoubtedly elections.
Your light and love, all I see, a thing or I'd ever want to need, my Lord. Protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Well, I have spoken at length about strong Iran before. We should try to strengthen the country. When a country and nation sees the enmity of the enemies, transgressors and arrogant powers, the way to confront them is to achieve power. Strong Iran and the idea of strengthening the country is a national slogan. Everyone believes in the slogan. Even those who have disagreements with me believe in the slogan of strong Iran. Undoubtedly, a strong Iran is better than a weak, powerless, and subservient Iran. It is important for Iran to be strong, respectable, and dignified. Now, who gives this power to Iran? As I mentioned earlier, it is the people who do so. It is the people who empower the country and their presence and participation. The essence and also the amount of their participation will surely influence national power.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
communique.
Iran and China have signed a 25-year strategic partnership, which marks an extraordinary milestone in the relationship between the two nations. So what exactly is in this roadmap? What does it mean for the two nations? What does it mean for the world? And how is this deal being perceived by rivals such as the United States? Let's take a closer look. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Officially dubbed the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, Iran and China finally inked the 25-year roadmap in Tehran on March 27, 2021, with the foreign ministers of both countries at the ceremony. Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, alongside China's Wang Yi, heralded China as being a friend for difficult times and underscored the importance of the friendship between the two countries. Now, the origins of this deal go back to 2016, when Iran's President Rouhani and China's President Xi Jinping began talks about increasing partnership between the two ancient civilizations who've enjoyed bilateral ties for 2,000 years. It's worth pointing out that this strategic partnership between China and Iran is not a clear-cut treaty of sorts like some people imagine, but more of a broader roadmap for the next 25 years, which seeks to strengthen cooperation between the two nations and their economies, their energy sectors, military, their international relations, and also in the fields of education, culture, tourism, and much more. It's quite a remarkable step in beefing up ties between the two countries, and both nations stand to benefit greatly from this strategic partnership. China will invest heavily in Iran's infrastructure, specifically in its manufacturing sector, communications, transportation, and in exchange, Iran will provide a steady supply of oil. It's important to note that China is Iran's largest trading partner. China is also the world's largest importer of oil, surpassing the United States in 2017. Although China leads the world in investments in clean energy and renewables, its enormous energy requirements mean that it needs a steady supply of crude, and that's exactly what Iran can provide. What makes this equally advantageous for Iran is the fact that Iran can not only offload the oil that it produces, but also get something directly in exchange for it in the form of direct investments and development of its infrastructure. Remember, Iran is the world's fourth largest producer of oil and has been cut off from the global market due to United States sanctions. Both its banking sector and its energy sector have been placed under embargo, making it difficult to not only sell the oil, but also engage in trade and finance, even if one were able to sell it in the first place. This partnership with China provides an alternate avenue for Iran to secure the development of its infrastructure while also providing China with a way to secure its demand for oil. It's a crucial step forward in rebuffing the alliance between the two powers and also an important milestone in the realm of international relations and Asia's geopolitical standing. Now, while some reports quote a figure of around $400 billion being invested by China in Iran, this appears to stem from a draft that appeared in the New York Times in 2020. That's not to say that it's not necessarily true. As a matter of fact, it doesn't seem an unlikely endeavor over the course of 25 years. But just to say that the partnership is more of a roadmap that expands investment, research and development, and mutual cooperation in a large number of fields. And it's not just about a one-time sum or a one-time figure. It's a much bigger deal than that. This partnership will see Iran integrated into China's Belt and Road Initiative, which China officially announced and adopted in 2013 as part of its foreign policy. The Belt and Road Initiative is essentially a revival of the Silk Road. This is the infamous network of trade routes that connected east and west, running all the way from China to Syria to Greece. These trade routes were not just by land, but also maritime. And China's Belt and Road Initiative seeks to bring about a modern adaptation of the ancient Silk Road, with maritime and land bridges going all the way from East Asia to West Asia to Africa to Europe. The United States, 2 months into Joe Biden's presidency, still has not rejoined the Iran nuclear deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. This agreement from 2015, which sought to limit Iran's nuclear program in exchange for unfreezing of assets and sanctions relief, was torn up by Donald Trump, who left the agreement in 2018. Now, the reimposition of sanctions in an attempt to isolate Iran on the international stage has brought on huge amounts of suffering, austerity, and anguish. Foreign investments, trade, commerce, finance, and international developmental projects have been quashed by the United States' efforts to malign Iran. During this time, however, Iran has found the ability to develop its own vaccines, its own defense industry, to innovate and make do with little and learn how to survive. The ingenuity of the Iranian people, combined with the willingness of other maligned countries like Syria, China, Russia, Venezuela, to cooperate with each other, has led to a shift in the balance of power. The United States and its aggression has created new realignments that are now seeing these countries actually grow stronger and create new opportunities, which might not have presented themselves otherwise. Not to take away, of course, from the brutality of sanctions, which are considered by many to be akin to siege warfare. But all this is to say that there is definitely a silver lining to be found here. The United States and its European allies, in trying to isolate and divide Iran and others, have actually ended up bringing these countries closer together and reinforcing their alliances. The significance of this strategic partnership between Iran and China is not only economically beneficial, but also a seismic shift in geopolitical terms. Joining me from Bangkok is author and journalist Pepe Escobar, editor-at-large for the Asia Times. Thanks for taking the time, Pepe. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
So, Pepe, you know, China has signed some of these strategic partnerships with other countries in the past as part of its general foreign policy and diplomacy. What makes this one with Iran so special? Why does this one stand out in particular?
Well, this is the solidification via a deal that was quoted as a roadmap, in fact, including by Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif, that it's the Belt and Road Initiative as applied to Southwest Asia. That's why it's so important. It's groundbreaking. I was writing about this only a few hours ago, that is as important in historical terms as the very close relationship between the China and Iran, Persia at the time, civilizations during the Yuan dynasty in the 13th century. They are back as they were at the time, with a very, very close relationship. And this has been the making for quite a while, of course. There was a lot of back and forth, diplomatic meetings, high-level meetings. It is a roadmap. Of course, we don't have details. Because it's very long-term. It's a 25-year long meeting, a deal, including everything in terms of trade, connectivity, and investment to how much China is going to get in terms of oil and gas from Iran and investing in the Iranian energy system as well. It's very comprehensive, of course, so the details will come up a little by little, of course. I heard there is some resistance inside Iran about it, which is, of course, considering the magnitude of this deal, it's perfectly understandable. But in terms of being a win-win deal, it's absolutely perfect for the Iranian economy in the long run, and in terms of securing a problem of national security for China, which is their supply of energy. So obviously, you can imagine how this was received in the Belt Road, of course. what I heard is, the usual link to the maximum pressure campaign, to some so-called analysts in the Belt Road that they think that they know anything about Iran, when in fact they don't, saying that now we lost Iran for good. but that's a joke. We cannot take these people seriously, obviously. The most important thing is that there are so many processes that will be driven or influenced by this deal in terms of the whole connectivity of Southwest Asia to Belt and Road, to the International Transportation Corridor, the INSTC, to the Russian vision of Greater Eurasia, that we're, you know, it's still too early for us to imagine the repercussions all over Southwest Asia of what is, in fact, a major game-changing strategic partnership.
And, you know, regarding the timing of this deal, we just had these talks in Alaska. And, you know, you wrote in the Asia Times that the timing of this deal is quite historic. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Absolutely. The timing was a thing of beauty, in fact. And I have been following everything that has been happening, even before Alaska, starting with the virtual Quad meeting. So I wrote four columns in sequence. They are completely interlinked. And we didn't know, in fact, that after the end of the 1E Sergei Lavrov meeting in Guilin, which was early in the week, where they were discussing details of the Russia-China strategic partnership, considering what had happened in Alaska. And obviously before that, the Quad. We didn't know that the China-Iran strategic partnership deal would be signed only a few days later, on a Saturday. So obviously, the timing was kept extremely secret by Wang Yi himself, of course, and by the Iranian leadership. So it all came together, because this involves, most of all, and this is something that it's never enough to stress to an international audience, in fact, the only three sovereigns in the planet right now are Russia, China, and Iran. I'm talking about major powers or near major powers. We could include Cuba, which is a sovereign in itself in an extraordinary story. But the breadth and reach of Cuba, you cannot compare to Russia, China, or even Iran in terms of areas of influence. So these are the three major sovereign powers in the world that not by accident are listed as threats to the U.S. in the U.S. national security strategy. And the fact that in only 2 weeks, you have them getting closer and closer via strategic partnerships in the case of Russia, China, and then in the case of China and Iran. That's what makes it really a game-changing moment in 21st century politics. Anything that happens from now on, it will never, the previous status quo is dead, completely. Now, the declining hegemon, as we know it, will have to deal with this interconnection between Russia, Iran, and China. And that's why the whole thing now is a completely different ballgame.
So, you know, the United States, they've been trying to isolate Iran for decades now on the international stage. How does this deal play into the context of sanctions, of the JCPOA, which the United States still hasn't reentered?
Well, it is a game changer as well, because now it's clear, including for the other members of the JCPOA, that Russia and China back Iran 110%. And on top of it, there is a strategic partnership involved in terms of China's support. And sooner rather than later, we're going to have a Russian strategic support as well, because in fact, members of the Iranian parliament are already talking about a Russia-Iran strategic partnership deal, which will be sealed eventually, in the short term, in fact. And obviously, within the P5+1 part of the JCPOA, we know since Vienna in 2015, I was there covering it at the time, that Russia and China support the Iranian position. This is even more solidified now. We know that Europeans are dying for this thing to restart, and they know that the only realistic way for JCPOA to be back is if we are back to what was decided in Vienna in 2015. So, and that leaves once again the isolated exceptionals, and we don't know. In fact, they don't. This is according to. I talk about this with my sources in the Beltway virtually every week. They all tell me the same thing. This administration has no idea what to do about the JCPOA. They don't have a policy. They don't have a vision. And of course, they don't have a strategy. Their strategy will be, okay, let's raise the pressure on Iran a little bit. We impose a few extra conditions, and then maybe we'll go back to JCPOA, and maybe we'll alleviate some of the sanctions. Well, this is not diplomacy. This is not foreign policy, as we know. But this is where we're at the moment. So, okay, we heard a few rumbles these past few days that they would be willing to, let's alleviate some sanctions to the tune of $20 billion. in the short to medium term. But this is just a rumor. There's not a proposition on the table yet.
So, I mean, do you expect Iran to be able to bypass, so to speak, U.S. sanctions in a sense, because now they have a way to offload some of their oil output with China and get something in return for that? Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, bypassing U.S. sanctions is an extremely complicated process for the firms who are doing it. If they are Iranian firms, if they are multinational companies, if they are European firms with multinational connections, even if they are Chinese firms, if you use the U.S. dollar, you are in big trouble. If you bypass the U.S. dollar, if you use some sort of trading mechanism bypassing the U.S. dollar, or if you deal in your own currencies, that's a completely different story. If you use barter, if you are paying anything apart from U.S. dollars, no problem. This is something that has been happening for quite a while, right? So this is the way to go, I would say. In terms of using SWIFT, again, which is the heart of the matter in terms of sanctions being, sanctions are basically gone, which is something that is not going to happen because it involves the U.S. Congress as well. So I don't see any, feasible scenario ahead where Iran would be back or Iranian firms would be back to using SWIFT for transactions with the West. With China is a completely different story because you can use reals, you can use yuan, you can use barter mechanisms, you name it. And now, within the scope of the new strategic deal, there are so many possibilities, right? Which, of course, have been discussed before the signing of the deal.
Pepe Escobar, thank you so much for your time and your brilliant reporting. It's a pleasure having you on.
All right. Okay. Cheers. Bye-bye. Thank you.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
One area that is clearly set to benefit from this partnership with China is Iran's energy sector. Iran is one of the world's largest producers of oil, and its economy and energy needs also rely heavily on oil exports. One of the main staples of the nuclear deal signed in 2015 was to lift the embargo on its oil sector. Following the lifting of sanctions, according to OPEC, oil exports from Iran increased by 1 million barrels within a year and doubled within 2 years. When Donald Trump left the deal in 2018, he reimposed sanctions targeting Iran's oil sector specifically, among its banking sector and others. Now, this new partnership with China provides Iran with an alternative way to export its oil and to get something in return too, oil, in exchange for infrastructure building. China is Iran's largest trading partner. Iran has a lot of oil, and China needs it. China is powerful enough to actually stand up to U.S. sanctions to the point where it's willing to engage with Iran in trade. It's willing to engage with its allies in defiance of the United States. Another example of why a strategic partnership like this is so important, if we look at the destruction brought on by U.S. sanctions, many companies that had been excited to invest in Iran were forced to abandon their projects and leave for fear of being fined, jailed, or sanctioned themselves by the U.S. Treasury. One such company is the Swedish communications giant Ericsson, which sought to develop Iran's 5G network. Now, this project was ultimately abandoned and will now be picked up by China's Huawei. This is, again, a huge advantage of having a partner like China who is not afraid to stand up to U.S. sanctions and can invest in developing the infrastructures of its allies. Now, it's interesting to see the reactions brought on by the announcement of this deal. When asked about it, this is what President Joe Biden had to say.
How concerning is the emerging partnership between China and Iran?
I've been concerned about that for a year.
You can see how the question was framed to begin with, that it's meant to keep pushing this xenophobic propaganda, this fear-mongering about Iran. Are you concerned? The reporter asks, and Biden replies that he is. That's weird. I didn't realize that it's his place to be concerned. Is Joe Biden the president of Iran? Is he the president of China? It's not really his business. And indeed, in the headlines of the Western press, one can also see an explicit admission that U.S. interests are at stake. Instead of analyzing how this strategic partnership can be mutually beneficial for both China and Iran, the mainstream media and the West portray it as a disaster because it weakens U.S. influence, with some pundits even invoking the Bush-era nomenclature and dubbing it the new axis of evil. They can't frame it as two countries engaging in commerce and partnership. No, they have to frame it as a threat because it weakens U.S. influence. But when we talk about weakening U.S. influence, what does that mean exactly? What is U.S. influence? Support for Israel and Saudi Arabia? Illegally occupying Syria and Iraq? Starving people with sanctions? Colonizing them in the name of democracy and then refusing to leave for decades? No one wants that. So maybe a decrease in U.S. influence, and by extension British and European influence, is a good thing. You know, the West has done enough damage to West Asia and the Middle East. So next time you see a headline about U.S. influence being weakened, what they really mean is the United States' ability to sanction Iran, to starve its people and isolate it on the world stage in order to effectuate Washington, D.C.'s foreign policy objectives. Just a few days later, on March 31st, Biden also announced a plan to invest $2.3 trillion into U.S. infrastructure. It felt a lot like he was trying to compensate for the recent announcement by China and Iran. He mentioned China six times in his remarks and actually pointed out correctly that China is out-investing the United States and outdoing them in virtually every sector.
The largest American jobs investment since World War II will create millions of jobs, good-paying jobs, will grow the economy, make us more competitive around the world, promote our national security interests, and put us in a position to win the global competition with China. Clean energy, the competition with China in particular. Who doesn't think we have to improve our infrastructure? They know China and other countries are eating our lunch. That's what competition between America and China and the rest of the world is all about.
Now, the only reason the Western media and politicians are making a fuss about the strategic partnership between China and Iran is because they weren't included in it. I mean, just imagine for a second if the United Kingdom or France or Germany had struck a 25-year partnership deal with another country. Would anyone in Western media be talking about this in the same manner? They would pat themselves on the back for being such great diplomats and merchants. But when China and Iran engage in a partnership, they demonize them. Or, for example, when Iran and Venezuela trade fuel and gold with each other, the United States pirates their ships and sells them off. And the United Kingdom freezes Venezuela's assets, their gold in London. This is how Western powers operate. They're a mafia. They say, you either give us a cut or we're going to take it by force. The United States feels threatened by China's growing power. And this is also why Trump, he went on and banned Huawei or threatened to ban TikTok unless they agreed to sell to a U.S. firm. That's not a free and fair market like they claim to uphold. That's trying to crush the competition and make sure that Silicon Valley and American companies, and by extension, the national security state, maintain their monopoly over the big tech industry. This Belt and Road Initiative, this revival of the ancient Silk Road, also poses a huge threat to the United States. It's a major point of contention in the Cold War between China and the United States. The Anglo-American way of doing things is to invade, occupy, to kill the local population and steal its resources. Just look at Iraq, just look at Afghanistan, look at Syria, look at the opium wars with China, the CIA and MI6 coup in Iran. The people in Asia and Africa and Latin America, they know all too well how Western imperialism corrupts and destroys their countries. The Chinese way of doing things is different. China is not sending its armies to invade the Middle East. China is not putting 800 military bases across the globe. China is seeking to engage with other countries based on mutual respect. You know, people talk about China colonizing other countries because it enters into strategic partnerships with them. Okay, well, hold on a second. I didn't see any Chinese bases in Syria stealing oil or occupying Iraq for 20 years or starving the people of Venezuela with sanctions. That's the United States. That's Britain. They're the ones who plunder. They're the ones who come and invade and refuse to leave and murder the local population. China engages with other countries based on a mutual understanding, based on mutual cooperation and respect. And I think I know which any rational person would prefer. These attempts by Britain, America, and Europe to isolate Iran and its allies on the world stage will ultimately prove to be futile. China and Iran, these are two ancient civilizations. They're not 300 years old. They're thousands of years old, with rich, vibrant cultures and histories. The two nations, they've enjoyed bilateral ties and friendship for millennia. The signing of this strategic partnership is just a modern manifestation and continuation of that very relationship. I think Iran's leader, Ali Khamenei, put it best in February when he said, "The post-US era has begun." Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, sin produces more sin. Notice the phrase dragged away, implying the loss of one's will to resist. People rarely stop at just one sin. A sin, no matter how small, eventually leads to another and another, eventually forming a chain that enslaves a person to that sin. Remember the time you told a seemingly harmless lie to your parents when you were small? As they pressed you for more detail, you had to tell more white lies to cover that first lie. The same applies to all sins. Whether it's stealing, cheating, racism, adultery, or murder. Unfortunately, television, movies, and the world in general are not helping by desensitizing people to sin. If you notice the culture that we live in, the prevalent culture of the world, we see that sin is not something that people are too concerned about. A lot of times, many people, they believe in ends justifying the means. So sometimes if you ask somebody who is taking a bribe, he would furnish an excuse that, oh, I have to pay for my bills, you know, I have to buy a new car, or I have to pay for my child's tuition, right? These are the excuses that we all, at some level, try to furnish in order to justify our sins. Brothers and sisters, remember, sin produces more sin. So you have to avoid that very first sin. But don't be hopeless if you have committed a sin. Even now is not too late. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing sin producing more sins. And we said that the only way to stop this is to stop sinning. Try not to carry out that first sin, especially the youth out there. There's a lot of emphasis in Islamic traditions when it comes to youth that because their soul is pure, because their heart is pure, don't let this purity of your heart and soul be tainted with sin. Once you allow that to happen, this black mark on your heart or on your soul, it keeps expanding. Have you seen that ink on a piece of paper, right? You drop a droplet of ink on a piece of paper and how it expands. Try it on a napkin, a tissue paper, right? And it expands. This is how the sins are. Don't let that first drop fall on your heart. We watch fictional characters trying to squirm out of a predicament by lying and cheating. And when they do get away with it, we laugh along with the crowd. We have seen those TV shows, we have seen those movies, those sitcoms, those serials, you know, those mystery movies, and we see that this thing works. This is a passive indoctrination of how you think, how your worldview is formed. Eventually, we find ourselves mimicking the worldly ways of others, compromising on our ideals and thinking, well, one little sin won't do any harm. It doesn't take long before we become desensitized to small sins and are ready to be desensitized to bigger sins. Brothers and sisters, the only solution is to have zero tolerance policy towards sinning. There is no other option. But we are not infallibles, right? I mean, everybody slips here and there, unfortunately. So remember to repent with firm commitment and determination not to repeat the sin again. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Dates, one of the fruits of paradise in Islamic tradition. With their paper-thin skin and juicy sweet flesh, they have pride of place, especially on Muslim dinner tables.
Walk into any halal shop.